September 1st already. I know we're all pleased to see our students returning to in-person instruction in every school system across the state. Unfortunately, this week, schools all over Baltimore City, including 31 just yesterday, had to dismiss students early due to the lack of proper air conditioning. It's unbelievable to me that this is still happening after the comptroller and I have worked together for the last 6 years to push to get every school air conditioned and to provide record funding for every school to be air conditioning. And our nonstop efforts to hold schools accountable. We were successful in requiring Baltimore City to reluctantly create a plan to finally bring air conditioning to all their schools, even against fierce opposition from legislative leaders. But in spite of them putting plans together, the work was not actually completed. We established a Healthy Schools Facilities Fund to provide additional state-funded grants to public schools, specifically to make urgently needed emergency air conditioning and heating upgrades. Baltimore City returned the money to the state after failing to spend it on the improvements. Our administration has provided 7 years of record funding to our schools, all of our schools across the state, and even more, the Baltimore City schools. Among the 100 largest school systems in America, Baltimore is the third highest funded school system, which makes it even more inexcusable. Earlier this year, we enacted an historic school construction plan with record funding to make sure that all school buildings across the entire state were modern, safe, efficient, and air-conditioned. Protecting students from the sweltering heat is critically important, and city leaders have continued to fail in this regard. But the problem goes far beyond that. Now, because of COVID-19, our public health experts have repeatedly stressed that proper ventilation is a critical tool to mitigate the impact of COVID-19. The CDC specifically recommended maximizing building ventilation and improving the level of air filtration as much as possible through the use of high-efficiency HEPA filtration units. And we have provided more than $3 billion in additional federal dollars in relief funding to the school systems in Maryland specifically for pandemic-related costs, including improvements to HVAC and ventilation and filtration systems for safer school buildings for our kids. And yet, even with those billions of dollars to address these issues, and with the school year already underway, city schools are still un-air-conditioned, and it's unclear even which schools or school systems have properly utilized all these billions in funding. After months of requesting this information, we're no longer asking. So today I am directing the State Superintendent of Schools and the Interagency Commission on School Construction to immediately provide us a report on ventilation and air filtration systems, district by district and school by school. And we will be holding school systems accountable for these financial resources and the way that they have been utilized to ensure that safe and healthy environments are in our school buildings for all of our kids. With that, we'll move on to a friendlier, happier topic. From the very beginning of this pandemic, I have repeatedly reminded Marylanders that we're all in this together. And getting through this together has required just an incredibly a massive effort, which involved thousands of dedicated public servants working tirelessly day in and day out to keep Maryland safe, from standing up and staffing testing sites and then vaccination clinics and building hospital surge tents to coordinating with local leaders on state guidance, procuring and distributing PPE and distributing meals to school children. These state employees have delivered the highest level of customer service under the most difficult of circumstances. And today we're honored to be joined by some of these incredible men and women, some of whom are here with us in person and others who are joining us virtually. And I just want to say that on behalf of all the people of a proud and grateful state, I want to thank each and every one of them for their dedicated service to the people of Maryland. And we're going to be presenting each of them with a governor's citation. I think some of them are going to be marching in here right now. Although they just missed all the nice things I said about them because they were out in the hallway. But can well, let's give them all a big round of applause for their incredible... Sure, we get everybody in here.
We have like a whole year of pictures with everybody on the desk.
That means you and I are going to get your time. Yeah. Thank you all so much. Very much. Governor said many nights.
So, I guess that's
it. I'm sorry about that. I guess I'm really amazed about it. It's like everybody showed up in person instead of
working. As you're leaving, I'm going to give you one of my, each of you, one of my much coveted comptroller medallions.
An Ellington Churchill medallion?
Yes, I do.
Give an M. Not Churchill. My name.
Can I just point out?
We have an M sympathy.
We have folks here.
We have
across the state with different specific functions, but on service and quickly share this.
Give me all.
And that's not typical of all states.
Well, we're proud of all the hard work everybody does all the time in their jobs, but particularly the way that you all stepped up during COVID. Can't thank you enough.
Now known as an all of government.
So let's all look at this gentleman and smile through your mask. Thank you all so much. Thank you all so much.
Thank you. My souls are very valuable.
I'm going to let the photographer
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Governor.
With that, I'm going to turn it over to my colleagues for any opening remarks. Madam Treasurer.
Governor, first of all, it's good to be here. And I really meant what I said about an all-of-government response. I just was meeting with some other state treasurers from other states around the nation. And people react differently, but a lot of people are still in their silos, even regarding something as important as this. So it is great recognition. Let me only say that I think it's perfectly appropriate to ask for a statewide accounting of where we are on the expenditure on modernization of schools. I take some pride, and I think you should too, Governor, and the Comptroller, that since you all signed off on a plan in 2017, almost all of the schools in Baltimore County, and about 55 out of the 76 schools in Baltimore City now have appropriate air conditioning and heating. There still are some to go, but of course the 5 years isn't over yet either, and it's good to have an accounting. We use different language, perhaps, and a different attitude, since I think the Baltimore City schools are schools of great promise. But we'll see what the facts actually are. I don't want to step on the comptroller's toes, but the comptroller and I had a very interesting experience last week that you would be interested in, and I think everybody would, at the Pikesville Armory in Baltimore County, which is interesting not only because that great historic area is so significant to the Pikesville area and it's ripe for the appropriate historic preservation and development, but it's a result of your having created a group, a commission, to look at the armory and the site and to try to create a vision for the next stage, and then moved on from that group to the present foundation, which is prepared to carry it on, and things are really moving quite smoothly. And
yeah, well, thank you.
I was very impressed. So that's what I did last.
Oh, that's good. Thank you for that.
Thank you,
Comptroller.
Thank you, Governor and Madam Treasurer. As thousands of students, teachers, and staff begin the 2021-2022 school year, I want to extend my best wishes for a safe and productive and successful year. Like so many Marylanders, Governor, I remain, however, very concerned about the rise in COVID cases, especially with the Delta variant. And we're just not sure how this is going to impact the upcoming school year. I expressed these concerns in a letter I sent to our new state superintendent of schools. I eagerly await his response. More specifically, I'd like to know what are the contingency plans that MSDE has and our local school systems have put in place. In the event that we see COVID infections in schools, which quite frankly, I think is plain as the noses on our faces, there are going to be repercussions from this particular variant, or at least we're certainly seeing it down south. I hope it doesn't happen, but I hope we're also practically planning in a pragmatic way, since we have a high number of students, teachers, and staff who remain unvaccinated. While I'm encouraged, Governor, that Maryland is one of the most vaccinated states in the nation, frankly, under your leadership and advocacy, it only takes one person to start an outbreak of this particularly communicable variant. That's why, in addition to a universal mask mandate, I believe we need a vaccination requirement to be put into place for teachers and staff. And when they're available, obviously based on the FDA, we need vaccination requirements for students. This isn't a novel idea. Other states have imposed these types of requirements, because quite frankly, we cannot take enough precautions to ensure the health and welfare of our students and to ensure that teachers and staff aren't risking their lives to do the jobs that we ask them to do and that they love. I saw a WIPR article printed yesterday that the superintendent made a very strong declarative statement, no school closings this year because of COVID. And I hope he's right. I hope this prediction was guided by the contingency and safety plans that MSDE and local school systems have put in place. And I hope to learn more about these contingency plans in his response to my letter from last week. Speaking of school closures, I just want to join Governor Hogan on this issue of climate control in schools. I was unbelievably disheartened to learn that over 20 schools yesterday in the city of Baltimore had to once again close because these school buildings still don't have air conditioning. I mean,
years and years of discussion of this at the Board of Public Works, where I literally brought in a split unit and put it in front of us and showed people that it could be put into the existing electric socket and it would cool any classroom. For a local system to spend years looking at that and dragging their feet for an affordable, technologically proper, appropriate, something that the local electrical union was willing to volunteer some of their services to put them in. They're not window units. These are split units. And I find it to be just completely unacceptable that we have a continuing situation not only in Baltimore City, but also in Baltimore County in some of our schools here. So it's like Groundhog Day. Every single first day of school over the past several years, you've seen school closures and early dismissals because they don't have air conditioning. And the reason they don't have air conditioning is because the school officials say, we're going to wait. And we're going to, you know, either build a new school or do a complete renovation. But this emergency situation continues to exist. The fact that it's still happening in the wealthiest state and the wealthiest nation in the history of the world, especially with, I mean, the governor is managing a tsunami of federal dollars coming in. It is not a money issue. It is not a technical issue. It is not a, oh, gee, the counties, just really think there's another alternative. No. This is something deeper, I'm sorry to report, and it's local political hubris standing in the way of what we need to do for our kids. Governor, I salute you for being an advocate for this. And especially now with the new COVID cases on the rise, the absence of HVAC units that should have been put in years ago and proper air circulation constitutes a serious public health issue and remains a socioeconomic injustice. It's my hope that we can stimulate action on this. It should happen yesterday. No student in Maryland should be forced to learn in sweltering, unhealthy, and unsafe conditions. And Groundhog Day is coming when we get winter. Winter's going to come. We're going to have the same schools. There's in parkas. Kids all zipped up in scarves inside the school classroom because they're not heated. These split units do both. No student should have to sit there in an un-air-conditioned or unheated classroom. And the issue is not money. The issue is political will. And thank you for your comments. I support them. I understand where the treasurer is coming from. I'm not trying to be adversarial with her because she generally wants this to happen, but you know,
I think Comptroller, that when we all can look at the facts, including the fact that over 50 schools have been air conditioned according to the plans, and in fact it is expensive to redo wiring. I really appreciate the volunteers, but the wiring in those schools did not support the changes. Let's look at the facts and have the facts available to everybody, and I think the story will be clear.
Okay. Well,
thank you.
The facts are, yesterday we had 31 schools closed because they didn't have air conditioners.
That's
we've
right.
been pushing and funding it for 7 years now. So
couldn't agree more.
Let's get started with the Secretary's agenda.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. There are 14 items on the Secretary's agenda and 13 reports of emergency procurement. Item A13 is being withdrawn at the request of the Department. I'm happy to assist answering any questions.
Questions on the Secretary's agenda?
I have one, Madam Treasurer. I'll defer to Madam Treasurer. So item A1, if someone could help me understand what the question is as far as this
item A.
Rather odd name, but I'm sure it means something. And
you know, I asked my staff the same question yesterday. I should know what Splunk means, but I didn't know.
Item A1 is a emergency report from the Information Technology. We have Secretary Leahy.
Secretary Leahy can explain Splunk to us.
Absolutely. Attorney Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, I'm Mike Delady, Secretary for the Department of Health. Splunk is a software system that allows us to integrate various cybersecurity tools and analytics and keep track of what bits and bytes travel across our network.
Okay. So I understand this contract is out because a former vendor simply walked away from the contract in March, apparently with the explanation that they had a better work opportunity than what they agreed to do for us. So what exactly is that, the right thing? I find that a little incomprehensible.
I do too, Mr. Comptroller. It's very disappointing. Unfortunately, when that individual chose to take what they saw as a better career opportunity for them, the vendor that was responsible for providing person and that type of personnel was unable in a timely way to find someone with that skill set. At that time, we came forward and asked for a 9-month extension simply because they were unable to find those people and we had to make certain the system continued to run as one of our sites. It has come back at this point as an emergency contract because as we discussed at the last meeting, I wanted to make sure all emergency contracts were brought to the board as soon as I became aware of them. This was not COVID-related, but I am told when I saw this on the agenda that our staff had worked with the Board of Public Works staff to make sure this was in the proper format, given the circumstances because of this individual leaving and the 9 months that have intervened. They have found folks with these skills. And in fact, because of our organization creating an internal, what's called a SOC, Security Operations Center, for the state, which is operating 24/7, 365, these vendors in the past have provided these services basically 8 to 6, 5 days a week. So we are bringing in our own people to do this work on staff for the SOC. And we can get the skills through this contract to require the Splunk licenses to still be available for the SOX operation.
Can I just say that I appreciate your candor?
Thank you, sir.
Really, it's commendable, but if you could make sure that the state statutory procurement laws are applied, the 45-day limit, and I would be appreciative, and
Absolutely, sir. Our staff is very aware of that, and they know I will not tolerate things not coming forward in a legal and appropriate manner.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Any other questions?
Just so I understand, Mr. Secretary, regarding the issue that the comptroller raised about the 45-day wait and your pledge to us that issues would come as soon as they come up. So this had actually not been brought to you until a couple of weeks ago?
I was aware that it was being worked on, and I was under the presumption that there had been a solution. I didn't follow up on that myself because I assumed it had been taken care of.
So I think maybe...
The diligence on my part is called for, absolutely.
And your staff's understanding of why you made that pledge to us, that it was not just a pledge, but an understanding of the importance of transparency.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, Monk, is that related to the word for cave?
Well,
that's a different
question. Yeah, exactly.
But I don't have anything to do with that.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We're a cave explorer.
Yeah.
They're exploring the bits and bytes.
Very good.
Is there a motion to approve?
I had a quick question on item 12, which is about awarding contracts with 5 vendors to provide tests public and private schools. My concern is that I think there were 35 proposals, and but of those, only 13 were evaluated, and I'm just what happened to the other remaining 20.
Item A12 is an emergency report from the Department of Health, and we do have Secretary Schrader available to answer your question.
Mr. Comptroller, what they did in the process is they reviewed the capabilities of the proposals for the 35 and whittled that down to 13, and then evaluated the 13 and came up with the 5.
Okay. Could you just give us an idea how these, how the winning vendors are going to implement
yes.
this program?
Yeah, we've been, this money, just to give you the background, the money became available in April. There was $182 million for 2 years in a grant from CDC, Centers for Disease Control. And we wanted to have it be as competitive as possible, so we put together a notice of availability on Emma and got, of course, got the 35 offers. We have been working since April with the local school systems to find out how they wanted to approach testing, or screening testing, during the school year. So this has been going on for about 6 months with them. And we gave them options. In some cases, we're going to provide the lab capability to school systems that would like us to provide that service. We also are offering money, and we made sure some of the contractors were contractors that they were already familiar with in their systems. So that's why we had the 5, wanted to make sure that it could meet the needs of statewide. So there's been a lot of work done with the school systems as part of their planning for the fall.
So how many tests a week do you anticipate, and how quickly will the results be received?
Well, so far we've got 14 school systems that have asked for our help, and 70 non-public school systems. The turnaround time on these should be within 48 to 72 hours. And, with the, you know, which is different from last year, the turnaround time has dropped dramatically, since last year.
These are PCR tests.
PCR tests, yes. We have point of care tests in our inventory that we've had, you know, millions of them from last year that we held in stockpiles, and we are delivering those on demand to school systems.
And these are paid for by the grant?
By the grants, yeah. Well, yeah, we've got this particular grant is PCR, and then we've had other grants from the federal government that it gave us the Bionex Now tests last year.
Okay. And these systems that have not joined in, are they the large systems or the small systems? Or
It varies. I don't have the data in front of me, sir. We can give you.
Are they offering pre-testing?
Yeah, some of them are doing it themselves, but we did it in a way that gave as many options as possible. There's no situation that we can't address. We can do pool testing. We can do non-pool testing. They can get reimbursed by us for their testing, or we can provide the lab. So
what is pool testing?
I'm sorry, sir?
Pool testing?
Pool testing is generally best used when you have low community spread. So, pardon my glasses here. If you have low community spread, let's say 1 or 2%, pool testing can be more efficient. But as the positivity rate goes up, it gets harder to differentiate. Because what you do is you take, let's say, what they'll probably do is take classroom by classroom. They'll do a pool of people within that children, and they'll test. And if it's all negative, then you're good. So, but if you have a higher positivity rate, then you have to go back and retest. So some school systems prefer just to do the straightforward PCR testing individually. So we give them, again, we're trying to make it as customer friendly as possible, and you know, according to the governor's customer service mandate, we want to make it as easy for them to participate as possible. So we've got a lot of different options.
So that's implemented already in the systems that have accepted it?
Yes.
And are the results made public?
we haven't.
Individually, but I mean.
Yeah, no, we haven't gone that far yet, but we can take that under consideration and report back.
I'm the last person to consult on medical advice, but I do think that transparency and, you know, honesty based on what's going on down south, which hopefully will not be replicated up here, but, you know, this is Mother Nature, and this is a, you know, I'm told that everybody's going to be exposed to Delta. Most of them are vaccinated, are somewhat protected, obviously, but it's a mystery as to when it's going to arrive, and then all of a sudden it vanishes. So, you know, we're some. I just hate to think that we're unprepared, but without contingencies. It sounds like at least this one.
I would say we're more prepared than anyone in America, and that's why we have the lowest positivity rate and the lowest case rate of all 50 states. Why we've got 81% of our population over 18 already vaccinated, and nearly 95% of our older population vaccinated. But we're preparing. We have a huge team of people looking at the data every day. It's all very transparent. I think we're also the most transparent state with our dashboard every day. The metrics of testing and everything is updated to the CDC and on our website.
I'm just suggesting don't mess with Mother Nature.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a significant threat, and it may disappear, like it surprisingly vanishes in India, for example. So we don't really know, but I'm observing what's going on down in the South, and I agree with the governor that the adult population in Maryland is more or less protected. It's the kids that are our most valuable asset that are not vaccinated, and for understandable reasons, because they're doing safety testing, et cetera, but I urge... I'll just
point out that we're also leading the nation on the 12 to 17-year-olds. We're third in the nation on the percentage of vaccinated as of yesterday. I didn't see today's numbers. And we've been having ongoing discussions with the White House about trying to get information about when they're going to be ready for the 5 to 11-year-olds.
What are they saying?
They're not completely clear. I mean, they're saying sometime in the fall, and we don't want to skip steps, but we want to make sure we can expedite it.
But kids less than 5.
I know. I don't think there's any chance of kids less than 5 happening anytime soon.
Right. I did want to mention the governor's been also leading us in terms of preparing for surge within children. We've got Dr. Delbridge leading that effort with a team that's supporting him, analyzing the capacity statewide for pediatrics, and we're also we're having active discussions with National Children's Center down in D.C. as a backup capacity. So we're planning for the worst and hoping for the best.
And we're happy with where we are, but we're not taking that for granted by any stretch of the imagination. There are a number of states that are at their peak of hospitalization, at their peak of case rates and positivity, and we're not. We're down 75% from where we were.
Could I ask Governor, or Mr. Secretary, since we're getting reports back on various things, I think it would be useful. I speak as a grandparent of a public school student. If we could have a presentation, sort of the questions the comptroller was asking, which school system, what proportion of the kids are covered by what, and what's happening. I do think it's a good story. I think everyone should hear it. Because now we are focused, first week of school, this week, next week, whatever. People are really focused and very, very concerned. And to have one place where you could set that out, I think would be helpful.
Mm-hmm. We'll take that back. We're all hands on deck on this with the school starting.
Yeah, I'm sure.
We'll definitely pull that together.
Hear a view about the next 4 to 8 weeks. Are we expecting some situation that is, have been described to me casually as something we really need to pay attention to, because it's not that we're not doing a good job. It's that the virus is going to find almost everybody, or the variant. So are we prepared for that?
Well, we're planning for the worst case scenario, and we are monitoring. I've been talking at length to Kevin Sowers over at Hopkins, because they actually have facilities down in Florida, and
we're monitoring the South, and so we are worried about it. What we are hopeful of is, you know, with the vaccination rate for 12 to 17, we're hoping that's going to blunt this a little bit with the 80% plus that we vaccinated. We're hoping that that'll blunt it, and then, but that we're still preparing for the worst.
Also working on boosters. And so, yeah, we have hundreds of people in the meetings every day, all week, and we're tracking it. And I would say trying to manage it better than anybody else. And we've been doing that for 18 months, and we haven't let up one bit.
If I might also thank you, Madam Treasurer, for your observation. It's been the governor's strategy from the very beginning, a year and a half ago, that this is going to be a multi-agency response. You saw the evidence of it today. But I really was delighted to hear you observe.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Are there any other questions on approval? Is there a second? Nothing on the secretary's agenda. We're going to move on to the Department of Natural Resources real property report. Good morning, Madam Secretary.
Morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Jeannie Hadaway Riggio, Secretary of the Maryland Department of Natural Resources. We have 7 items on our real property agenda today, and we're happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions on DNR?
I have one question or point. It's been brought to my attention that we're funding local synthetic, and that people who are synthetic turf fields are concerned about the synthetic turf. Do you have a response other than, well, that's the local decision? I know you all were looking into the question of synthetic turf.
Yeah, so synthetic turf is an acceptable project under our program Open Space, and we have funded a number of projects in that regard. There are a lot more options on the market now than there used to be in terms of synthetics, and I do know that it does provide additional flexibility to the local jurisdictions at times. But if there's specific information that you would like.
Yeah, people are concerned about the health impact. And maybe I'll just send the letter to you.
Sure.
But there is still significant concern, and people want to know why we are aiding and abetting something that is unhealthy and unsafe. And I would like to say, well, it's now healthy and safe, but I don't have that background.
Any other questions?
Move approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
3-0 on DNR. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll move on to the university system.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Tom Hickey, representing University System of Maryland. We have 4 items for your consideration this morning, and we're happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Tom. Any questions on the university system? Is there a motion?
Move approval.
3-0. Move to Park Transportation.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, my name is Greg Slater, Secretary of Maryland Department of Transportation. The Maryland Department of Transportation is presenting 24 items for your consideration today, and we are here to answer any questions you may have.
Questions on transportation.
Just quick question on it's a Department of Transportation issue that somehow is Secretary Churchill was responsible for, but I will
maybe.
And I will await supporting him in that answer.
Anyway, I would move approval on the transportation thing.
All right, sir, second. 3-0 on transportation. Now we'll move on to you, Mr. Secretary of General Services.
Thank you, Governor. Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Ellington Churchill, Secretary for the Maryland Department of General Services. Today we are presenting 63 items on our agenda, including 1 supplemental. We are withdrawing items 47 and 61 at this time. I would note that our agenda includes more than $8 million in capital grants and loans to noteworthy entities across Maryland, and we have recommendations for award for 4 small businesses and 4 minority business enterprises. We are available to answer any questions you have at this time.
Thank you. Okay, the Comptroller has a question.
Yes, quick question on item 34S. This is a three-year sole source contract to retain Dr. John Wainwright as an independent contractor on the state's MBE study that you're working on. I dunked out Dr. Wainwright's importance on this. See him, Boyd. Hopefully some of his analysis ability will be transferred over to other staff also. I understand he's had a long history with us. But I would like you to, send us information on how many contracts per year are 100% compliant, how many are at least 50% compliant with the state's MBE program, and how many are below the 50% threshold, or you can list them however you want to. I just want to get a sense of the compliance metrics of the program in a supportive way. I know it's difficult to implement.
Well, thank you, Mr. Comptroller. We'll look at how the information, yes, and I'll download with your staff to make sure that we've gotten all the indicators that you're.
And I take it each time it's less than 100% compliant, we have to grant, not grant, but there's some kind of waiver. So maybe have a category for that. And once again, I'm not asking it in a adversarial way. I'm just asking it in a, can we get better?
Thank you. Any other questions? The motion?
Hang on, I have two more. Sorry about that. The item 37, I had a request. The request from the Department of Veteran Affairs to exercise a renewal contract at Charlotte Hall. And I guess it's a good news because they only had a 3.6% MBE participation rate, but they tripled that and succeeded, but the goal was 25%. So I guess I don't know whether Secretary Owens is there, but is the department on top of everything going on at Charlotte Hall?
Yes, we do have Secretary Owens on the line.
I want to say hi to him. I haven't seen him in a while, since Mako.
I understand that he may be with Ms. Shannon Murphy from the Charlotte Hall Veterans Home.
Yeah, that would be.
Ms. Murphy's not with us either.
Anyway, if Secretary Owens could get back to us on the MBE compliance, but also on the issue of COVID as far as the safety of...
We're learning this new technology. Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller. Yes, we are here. We're very proud of what you're reading. We just wish there was more time for you to read more. We're on top of that, and we're also, I wish we could have been there with you all this morning, but we had things to attend to here because, of course, you know, we're one of those other pieces of the puzzle, state workers that are holding the line on the outbreak down here. So anything you need to know, we're happy to supply. But, yes, indeed, we're very pleased with what's going on today.
Well, if there's anyone in the state of Maryland that I associate with digital connectivity and the Internet, it is Secretary Owens.
He's very good at splunking on her.
Yeah. Mr. Secretary, as long as you're there, I would like you to just update us quickly on the health aspects of COVID and all of the situation concerning your unbelievable important residency.
Mr. Comptroller, I'm actually with, this is like a January, we're facing backward, we're facing forward. Sharon Murphy is on terminal leave beginning today, and I'd like to introduce you to the new administrator, Michelle Cariasso, who is coming in. She's the one that sends the governor reports every day about where we are. So if you'd like to speak to that issue, the Comptroller is asking about, Michelle.
Yes, sir. Good morning, everyone. As of today, we have... 14 cases that we've confirmed since the start of the second wave of our COVID here in the facility. Out of those 14 cases of the residents served, we have recovered 12 cases. Fortunately, two of the hospice patients that have been infected had expired, but they were hospice patients prior to getting the COVID, sir. With our staff, we have 9 confirmed cases. We've recovered 5 of them. 3 are have no symptoms at all, and one with mild symptoms, sir. That is our current count.
Give them the vaccination while you real quick.
Introduce yourself for the record, please.
I'm sorry?
Your name.
My name is Michelle Carriasso, and I'm the director for Charlotte Hall Veterans Home.
Thank you.
Is the testing free?
Yes, sir. We do twice a week PCR tests and daily rapids if needed. Answer Secretary Owings' question to give you the vaccination rate, as of August 31, our vaccination is 96% for our residents. Most of the unvaccinated are hospice patients. Thank you so much, sir. And we have 62% of our staff vaccinated. Today, September 1, we are offering another vaccination day to give opportunity for the rest of our staff who are interested to get the vaccine. We are giving them free Moderna vaccines today, sir.
Talking about the boosters, if the governor is also interested.
And also for the booster program, sir, we are scheduled with Walgreens Pharmacy to offer boosters to the immunocompromised residents that we have on September 22 and 24.
Thank you for that. Mr. Secretary, thank you for figuring out the technology.
Thank you all very much. It's an honor to be with you all this morning.
Did you say 62% of the staff?
Sir. Yes, ma'am. Our long-term care staff are 62% fully vaccinated.
How about
that will increase today, ma'am. We have high hopes that majority of the rest of the staff that we have who had thought twice about it will get it today.
Could you let us know then if it's this soon that you think they will be vaccinated?
They're all required to be vaccinated now or be subjected to rigorous daily tests. We put an order out a couple of weeks ago demanding that they do it. So they're going to do it or they're going to have some issues.
Yes. Yes, sir. We have twice a week PCR tests, universal for the, we do that for the vaccinated and unvaccinated, just because it's, we have extra precaution just to make sure that we are doing diligence, make sure that it does not spread. We do not, none of our residents catch the virus here in our home.
Okay. Any other questions on DGS?
I just wanted to ask Secretary Churchill if you could give a general update on the contract concerning knowledge services. Where is that? I saw a letter from the Black Caucus that mentioned a lot of concerns. I just want to find out what.
Sure. Again, thank you for the question, Mr. Comptroller. After the last time that we had the item on the agenda and it was withdrawn, we engaged in a series of conversations, of course, with the board. One of the recommendations that came out of those conversations concerned whether there was a plan to have informational sessions with the business community on exactly what Knowledge Services provides, how to integrate, to learn some of the concerns from our local business community as to how to interface with the contract, as well as to dispel any misconceptions around really where the value or the dollar amounts of the contracts are going, whether it's purely going to a out-of-state firm or if the local community is truly getting a benefit from this. So the department and coordination with Knowledge Services has organized a series of informational sessions. And so we had the first yesterday. Unfortunately, the communication that was sent out by Knowledge Services was a little misleading in terms of...
Very misleading.
Well, yes, and was said so, but that was not their intention to mislead. It was just to get out and try to drum up as much interest in the contract. I'm happy to say yesterday was the first session There were a couple hundred vendors who attended the session. And from that, 68% of the vendors were small business or minority firms. And many have reached back out to Knowledge Services to get more information. And so there's a session today and a session on Thursday. And we encourage anyone who has an interest or a stakehold in the matter to attend or request a link to attend the session. So surely it was to do a little bit of our diligence to educate the business community in Maryland as to what are the terms and aspects of the contract. And we're also talking with our elected officials who have expressed some concern that we know the full landscape of where the pushback is on the contract.
Send a letter to the Legislative Black Caucus if maybe you could share some of the content with us.
We will share any and all content. And again, what we want is to provide the facts and to learn really the areas of concern from the business community.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Any other questions? Let me just for a second. 3-0. Thank you all very much. Please be good.